Alright, we are learning Melachim Aleph. We are in the 11th chapter. We just began this very difficult parak last week. This is the parak in which we will see the very last chapter, which discusses Shlomo HaMelech. As we mentioned last week, the very end of this packet, you'll see that he passes away. But before he does that, a lot of huge mistakes are mentioned. And as we saw in the beginning of this parak, in Pasuk Aleph, Beis, or more specifically Pasuk Gimel, it tells us exactly how many wives he took. Specifically, he took 700 wives, 300 Pilakshim, concubines, and Saros, as is translated, as noble women. The significance of why he took 1,000 wives was not just random, but what he wanted to do was to be able to marry into families of positions of power throughout the entire world, or perhaps to marry the king's daughters, marry princesses, so that he would be able to retain peace in the world, so that no nation would wish to harm him or the Jewish people. After all, why would you want to fight up with your start up with your daughter, so that your daughter's husband? And therefore, this was perhaps one of his motivations, was a political move in order to ensure that the Beis HaMikdash would be able to remain intact, would be able to remain in peace. So he married these noble women. And as we mentioned in the Radak, the mistake that he made was that the Torah explicitly says he's not allowed to do that. The Torah says, Lo yar b'lo nashim, not allowed to have too many wives. And as we interpreted, too many equals 18. Some people would maybe think too many equals 1. But over here, it's 18. And he took, obviously, more than 18 wives, 1,000. And the reason for this is because the Pasuk says explicitly that what may happen is they may go astray, they may worship idols, and this. You're not going to have a close relationship with them. And therefore, in the event that sometimes when a person does not have a close relationship with their spouse, sometimes they may go astray, they may look for other ways to be able to derive fulfillment in their lives, and frame it that way. And he felt, Shlomo did, because he was such a chacham, he read the Torah, he said, oh, the reason why I'm not allowed to have too many wives, because an average king, you know, his wives would worship idols. Or it's possible that marrying them from other nations and then converting, they may go back to the traditions of their past. But that's someone who's an average king. I'm no average king, I'm no average person. And I'll prove it to you. I just built the Beis HaMikdash. God speaks to me. So, obviously, because I'm such a brilliant man, I'm such a great person, so I can have certain exceptions can apply to me. Certain rules don't apply to me. And therefore, he did so. However, as the Radak quotes, the pasuk that says that Ayishal Chacham B'Chachmaso, a person should not praise themselves over the wisdom that they have. Because all the things that we have are really just gifts from Hashem. They're all gifts from God. As I often tell an individual who is fortunate to be living in the United States, fortunate to have their health, fortunate to have affluence, say, you know what, you could have been born in Africa. You could have been born, some terrible, tragic community, a third world country, whatever it may be. The fact is, I'm born where I am. It's absolute luck. So I should be such a bal gaiva and haughty because of who I am and what I am. It's a gift from God. And therefore, it's our responsibility to use those gifts, to be able to not misuse them, but certainly not to think that we're better. And that was the mistake that Shlomo made, thinking that the rules don't apply to him because he's smarter and he's wealthier. And that was the mistake that that he made.
How many wives did David have?
Six.
Just six? Why did
she
get? How many wives did David have?
The reason why I know that, actually, is when this pasuk is mentioned about not having too many wives, which is in the Chumash, and it's very much not explicit at all, the number 18, it's actually derived from what happened with regarding David, that it says regarding having too many having the laws of a king, which is in no, it's in Sefer, it's in Parshas Re'eh, I believe, I recall, and let me see if I can find it very, very quick, and I'll share with you this Rashi. It's not in Shoftim, is it? Maybe it is in Shoftim. I apologize, it's in Parshas Shoftim, I'm sorry. V'lo yar b'lo nashim. So it says in on page 1028 in Parsha Shoftim, morning, it says, and I'll just read the words of Rashi. El shmona esri, you're only allowed to have 18 wives. Shemitzinu shehayu lo leDavid shisha nashim, sheish nashim. That he had 6 wives, and it's derived from Shmuel Beis. You have to look over there in chapter 3, verses 2 through 5. V'nemarbo, and it says, V'imat v'osifu cha kahena v'kahena. It says that you have had the amount of wives. If you want, you could add kahena like this, ukahena, and like this. Right, you had 6, you can have Kahena and another 6, and Kahena another 6. Which means that you could have only up to 18. That's how it's derived from Shmuel Beis. Okay, so that's how I knew it says 6. Don't ask me their names, but he had 6 wives. Anyway, that was the mistake that Shlomo made. And we also derived, as we saw last week, that not necessarily did he make all these mistakes of worshiping idols, or perhaps he didn't speak up. And very often, and as we'll see this again in the Pesukim and Mesudas David, that even if you don't do something wrong, but you see someone doing something wrong, so you're considered to be an accomplice in this matter. You're considered to be held as responsible, because you had the opportunity to protest. You see that there's a mistake, there's something which shouldn't be done, and you being present, and we actually gave the example of Kamsa bar Kamsa, that the rabbis oversaw this guy being thrown out of this party, and the embarrassment that this person felt, and they didn't speak up. By you not speaking up, there's a kind of shtika kodah. It's as though you're admitting to it, what's going on is fine. Okay. So we'll develop that further. But let's continue with the next pasuk dalet. Vayihi is zikna Shlomo. So we never mentioned anything up until this, anything about this point about his age. But all of a sudden, we know that he did become a king at a young age. But we don't really see the progression of how old he was. And all of a sudden, they throw right at you, Zikna Shlomo. It wasn't the time when Shlomo was older, that his wives went astray and they worshipped. They worshipped idols. His heart, Shlomo's heart, was not complete with God. Kilvav David Aviv, like his father's heart was. Vayelach Shlomo Achrei Ashtores Elohei Sidonim. So Shlomo, as the sentences explicitly say, he went after this idol worship, which was the god of Sidonim. The Achrei Milchom Shikutz Amoinim, and he also worshipped other idols, which was a Shikutz, which Mesudas Sion says it's a language, it's a Ganai, or it's a Toev, a Toeva, it's an abomination, a repulsive and disgusting avodah, worshipping an idol. So he was engaged in all these different forms of idol worship. V'yashlomo harab b'eini Hashem, and all the different idols that he was engaged in worshipping, obviously, it was no longer good that which he was doing in God's eyes. Hashem kedavid aviv. And as is mentioned again, it's clear that David was not acting in the same fashion, the same way, or did not wholeheartedly follow Hashem as his father David had done. So this is what's the contrast, again, comparing Shlomo to his father. There's no comparison. David was greater, at least at this stage of his life.
Ziknat Shlomo, the king, is not necessarily old. Isn't it the king's wise?
Zaken v'zek shekana chachma.
Which makes it that much worse.
Right. Or maybe, right, the fact that, let's say, Zaken means he was knowledgeable of this information, and yet he still allowed it. He still allowed his wives to do it, and then he worshipped it. If you want to literally read the sentences, unlike the way that we've been translating, is that he just didn't protest. So we see that this is a progression. I'll never worship an idol. I'm not going to worship an idol. So you can do it. You can do things wrong. But when you associate yourself around people that do things wrong, guess what ends up happening? It creeps up on you. Eventually you start doing the things wrong too. So even though initially Shlomo in a million years wouldn't worship an idol, but once his wives do it and continue to do it, he said, big deal, it's nice, no big deal, it's no problem. All of a sudden we see that he did precisely the same thing. It's a problem. Now,
so how could they say that anybody who thinks that he did wrong was mistaken?
Because it's certainly, to speak this way about Shlomo is so harsh that we would almost have no choice but to read the sentences differently, especially that we just saw in the previous sentence, in Pasuk Vav, as well as in the Pasuk Dalet, it says that he was not as complete with God as his father. Well, what do you mean? He was involved in idol worshiper. He's an idol worshiper. How could you call him? The fact that we're even thinking to compare him to his father must be that he really isn't so bad. What do you mean he's not so bad? He must have worshipped idols. No, that's a mistake. That's how it's derived from the sentences, that it can't be literally that he worshipped an idol, because otherwise why are we even comparing him and saying, oh, his heart's not complete. What do you mean he's not wholehearted in his service to God? He's an idol worshipper. He's not an idol worshipper, but he allowed idol worship to continue in his midst, and therefore he's held accountable.
A man who built Beit HaMikdash, at the same time he's building Beit HaMikdash to a living. A man who built Beit HaMikdash has no business being involved with anybody who's building, because he knows what he...
Right. Of all people.
How can you even find that cries out?
Right.
Worse than anything else.
Especially that if we, as we mentioned before, if you look in the Beit HaMikdash, you could actually look at the cherubs and say, oh, that's also Avodah Zarah. This is Avodah's idol worship, that's idol worship. So the fact that he allows this and he builds this, it almost puts them on the same level. It kind of like takes away and marginalizes the greatness of the Beit HaMikdash at some level by the fact that he says, oh, worship this idol, go to the temple,
how could
work
man
there.
Who builds full-heartedly the Beit HaMikdash turn around and build it's finding excuses why you're doing something terribly wrong.
Well, the Beit HaMikdash was built already.
Yeah, but at the same time he was building up for the pay.
You know what I'm saying? He finished what he
should, right.
And now he's going on to his under the influence.
But if he...
Yeah.
You can't blame somebody else for doing that.
The Navi's holding him accountable.
He opened the door. This is what happened. And he opened the door to the devil.
But this is right. This is, it shows that even someone who builds a Beit HaMikdash should never believe, oh, I'm a tzaddik. It's okay. I can do this thing wrong and it won't affect me. I can do such and such a thing and it won't make a difference. We have no idea the power of what can influence us. And therefore, even someone like Shlomo HaMelech, who did so many great things in his life, that does not mean that necessarily you're going to continue in that way. You have to work on yourself every single day. And the day that you start slipping is the day that you can fall.
You could say that Hashem gave him a Nisayon, built the Beit HaMikdash, and then he
fails. Right? But it also, this shows us as the author of Ecclesiastes, of Koheles, of this, the constant peaks and valleys of how life is really a journey, about how sometimes we are up and sometimes we're down, that this is how Shlomo went through his life. That he had challenges, and he had, if I can take this step, he had some doubts on some level. He had questions. and by engaging in these foreign idols and things of that nature. But at least, as it said, they actually want to lock up Kohelas. They didn't even want to consider it to canonize it as part of the Tanakh. But the last sentence tells us, this is so-called, Sofdar Kol Nishmat Alkim Yareh. At the end of Shlomo's life, he finally was able to get back to that understanding of fearing God, of embracing God. So even though their life has challenges, and it's foolish, and the great thing actually about the Torah is it shows the humanistic side of people, that they're not all superheroes, because then I can't relate to them. I can relate to someone like this, someone who did great things and yet had challenges in their lives, and yet at the end of their life somehow was able to hold on to that faith. And that's what our goal is to do as well. Despite the challenges that we have, we have to try to hold on to that faith. So that's perhaps one of the messages.
It's interesting because you said it challenges his whole life.
Right.
And he grew up he was in Mitzrayim.
Right.
And he was involved in great things, and he was involved with a nation that was of daily living, yet his children stayed with him.
Right.
So did he.
And so, and he right. stayed with
right.
him.
That's
and he was able to survive.
Right.
He could have had a lot of right. his
probably did. And some people explain that's precisely the reason why now we're in Golos, and here we are in Chutz La'aretz, in diaspora, that when one blesses their child, which some do on Erev Yom Kippur, some do every Friday, the blessing that they say is, may you be like Ephraim and Menashe. Who are Ephraim and Menashe? Those are the children of Yosef. That despite wherever you are, no matter what environment you may be in, try to remain just like Yosef and his children, steadfast in their religious observance. We don't bless our children to be as Shlomo, but as Ephraim and Menashe. Right, same. But I mean, again, we have to be sensitive again who we're dealing with, not to speak so negatively about such a great individual, because we have to understand, obviously, he went through these challenges, but at the same time, just not to say, oh, he's an idol worshiper. That's the sensitivity that Chazal have. They don't want to just quickly say, oh, yeah, this person's a tzad, this person's a rasha. Life is not black and white by any stretch of the imagination. If you look at the Mesudas David, in fact, this is what, again, is pointed out. It says, Ratzel Lomar, at the very top of page 118, Pasuk Dalet, Ratzel Lomar, Lahaniach Osan, Lechas Hein Acher Elohim Acherim. It doesn't say that he went and worshipped idols, but he allowed these women to go into worship idols. And he continues, the next Mesudas David, Pasuk Hei, says, Ve'el Shlomo, Al Shlomicha Benashav, Ha-holchos. He didn't protest. He didn't speak up. Therefore, because he didn't say anything, ma'alav ha-katuv ki'ilu holach achrayim, it's as though he worshipped it. The fact that he condoned such behavior by not speaking up for it. And in fact, if you look in the English, it kind of softens the blow even more. On the right side, right before the number 7, it says the verse begins, so it was that when Solomon grew old, implying that only when he grew old was he too weak to prevent his wives from engaging in open idolatry. And this, the verse contrasts him with David, who even in a frail invalid was able to respond vigorously to a crisis, as it said in the first chapter in Behold a Nation. So that's the comparison, that David, even when he was weak, still had an inner strength, and that's the goal, that even if when we are physically frail, we have to have a strong mind. And Shlomo, unfortunately, when he reached that age, he allowed his wives to begin worshipping idols in a public form. And therefore, that was the mistake. But it says that, implying that when Shlomo had all of his wits with him, he had his physical strength and everything, he would never have allowed his wives to do such a thing. It was only once he became older that this ended up transpiring. Now, there's another interesting point that I'd like to mention. It's not in our packet, but it certainly is worth, it bears sharing just a moment. Now, it's interesting, as I said, that it says that he became old. Vayhil ei zikna Shlomo. As though to say that it just snuck up on him, his older age. So on this, it's brought down in the Medrash Tanchuma, Parshas Chayisara. It says like this. Loma kaptza, and I'm just going to read a few lines, which is not in our packet. Loma kaptza lav zikna. How could it be that this old age jumped up upon him, snuck up on him? That he changed from being young, or you know whatever it may be, his whatever age he was, and all of a sudden we just fast forward to his older age. So listen to this, Rabbi Yeshua Bar Nachman, and I think this is something to think about. He says, "Mnei arba dvarim hazikna koyfetzas al adam." That this is not really referring to that he reached a certain age, but he aged much, much too fast. He was he says there are four things that cause a person to age before their time, before actual chronological numbers, let's say. Vimnei hayir, and we'll flesh these out briefly. Vimnei hayir, because of fear. Vimnei kas banim, because of anger or frustration. Here it says specifically with one's children. Nimnei ishara, because of a evil spouse. Let's translate it that way. Ishara. Nimnei hamilchamos, and because of war. And he discusses each of them. He says when it comes to Yira, we learn that from David. It said in regarding David, Lo yachol David lechas lefanav, Lidrosh Elohim, he was not able to go before to Hashem. Ki nivas mipnei cherev malach Hashem, because he had this fear of the sword. Now, yira doesn't just mean fear. It could also mean, if I could translate it as some type of stress, it could be like anxiety. So he was constantly worried and concerned. So we know that that can make a person not feel well. And therefore, it said right afterwards that David zaken, that David became old, which we read about in the Haftorah. Kas banim, being angry, that also makes a person, takes away from a person's energy, and makes a person feel weaker, especially when it comes to the stress of one's children. We learn this from Eli, which we saw all the way in the beginning of Shmuel Aleph. It says that Eli zakin ma'od. He was a very old person. V'shama eskol ashayasin banav l'chol Yisrael. He heard what his two kids were doing. They weren't acting properly in their service in the Mishkan at that time. And it says right there that he was old. So why does it have to say that he was very old? It means that the stress and the anxiety of that fact that your children are not going in the way that you were hoping they would is something in which takes a toll on the human spirit. And it says, Mimei Mulchamos, goes out of order, war. We learn that from Yeshua. This is that after Yeshua was engaged in the war, fighting the 31 kings when he entered into Canaan, it says right afterwards, Yeshua zakin b'abiyamin. You can imagine. Physical war, so it takes a lot out of a person, physically and also emotionally. And then it says, Mipnei Ishara, which I'll translate loosely as an evil spouse, as it says here, Vahil e zikna Shlomo nashem hito as levavo achrei elohim acherim. The fact that his wives were engaged in doing things which were not proper, the pasuk immediately afterwards it says that he became old. So what does it mean that he became old? It doesn't mean that necessarily he became 20 years old or 50 years older, but the idea of being with someone in which is not on the same page as you, doesn't have the same philosophical views, doesn't have the same interests as you, so that level of stress can take a toll on a person. However, as we read last week, and I talked about this on Shabbos, this past Shabbos, by Avraham Avinu, what does it say? Even though it says, she said, Adoni Zakein, says that, she said, you know, my master, that Avraham's an older gentleman, but nonetheless, when the Torah talks about Abraham, it says Abraham zokin bo b'yomim v'Hashem berach es Abraham bakol. It says regarding Avraham Avinu that he was blessed with everything because he had a relationship with his wife in which they were partners, and therefore such a bond is able to give a person kol, everything. And therefore that's the message that's being derived over here. That is a very interesting medrash about how these different things, and certainly something to discuss and think about, have the capacity of making a person age prematurely, or getting feeling old, or losing of their strength and their inhibitions and desires to be able to grow because of these different challenges in life. So that was one of the aspects that the Medrash says of why it says that he was old immediately after the challenges that he had with his wife. One other very brief point I want to mention before we continue the next pasuk. It mentions, as we already discussed, if you look throughout the entire Torah, it tells us you're supposed to do this mitzvah, do that mitzvah, do this correct, don't do this. It doesn't tell us the reasons. We don't find that the Torah reveals the reasons for things. And the Gemara in Sanhedrin on Chaf Aleph Amid Beis asks the question, in the name of Rabbi Yitzchak, "Nimalo nisgalu tami Torah." Why doesn't the Torah tell us the reason why we do things? You know, it's like, you know, a kid says, you tell a kid to do it, because. All mitzvos tells you, you know, even things which are not chukim. It doesn't say necessarily why I should do some hints. But when it comes to not doing certain things, it doesn't say the reason why a person shouldn't worship idols. It doesn't say why a person shouldn't steal. It doesn't say all these different, all the negative prohibitions, why you shouldn't, some chukim, you know, different things. So why doesn't the Torah explain? You know, doesn't it make sense I should know the reason why I'm doing what I'm doing? I'm just blindly doing things like a robot without allowing me to become a better person. Then what's the purpose of those mitzvos? So he explains, this is the Gemara. The Gemara says there's a reason why the Torah does not specify. And I'll show you why. Because there are actually two times that the Torah does. And the times that it was mentioned, the reason, there were mistakes that were made. And what were those two reasons, two times? Well, that it mentions that there is a mitzvah, that you get the reward of a richa shamim, of a long life. But it doesn't tell you why you should separate the mother from the egg, that from its young. The pasuk doesn't say the reason. You can maybe think of different reasons. So, but there are two times it is mentioned. It's by a king, Yarbo Nashim, about having too many wives, and also, let's that one first. So, it says,
because a person could say, well, I'm better than that.
Exactly, that's what he says. That Shlomo said, Ani Arbe V'lo Asur. The pasuk says, don't have too many wives, because they will turn away, or you will turn away from God. Oh, that's the reason? It doesn't apply to me, so I can do it. And of course, we know what ended up happening.
What's the other one?
And then the Gemara continues, it says, V'lo Yar V'lo Susim. Don't accumulate too many horses. Why? V'lo Yashiv Es Ha'am Mitzrayimim. Because otherwise, you may go back to Egypt. Right? We may end up going back to Egypt. So Shlomo said, okay, I'll go accumulate a bunch of horses, but I'm not going to have any connection and relationship with Egypt. I will buy their horses, but I will have no connection or any relationship with Egypt whatsoever. So what happened? It says that he went and made all these purchases of horses, and of course we end up knowing he ended up marrying someone. So we see from here, that is the reason why the Torah does not mention the reasons for mitzvos, because if we had reasons for it, we'd say, oh, so it doesn't apply, right? So the reason why I keep kosher, like people, I remember one time I was in Miami, we had mishmor every Thursday night, which basically meant, you know, the boys stayed up late, and it was my turn to buy a bunch of junk food, right? And I was in the supermarket, and there was this guy, of course, you know, yeshiva bacher, you know, tzitzis, the whole shebang, and this guy looks at me, he goes, you're Jewish, right? I'm like, yeah, I guess, why? He goes, I am, what do you want? He goes, well, I see you're buying all this candy. I'm like, yeah, we're, you know, having a little party. He goes, this is not kosher. How could you buy non-kosher food? Like, what do you mean? And I showed him there's a little symbol. He goes, how can this be kosher? It's not healthy, right?
Oh.
It's not healthy food. Anything which is not healthy is, obviously this guy's never gone to any kiddush on Shabbos. Then he would, he'd have bigger questions as to what's healthy. But a lot of people think, yeah, oh, that's the reason why you have to keep kosher, because you're supposed to keep healthy, right? So therefore, so that means I can go to a restaurant, as long as it's, you know, fat-free and no carbs, whatever, so I can eat whatever I want, right? And so obviously that's the problem. If there are reasons attributed to something, so then you could always dance around and end up not doing the mitzvos. You'll end up justifying the reasoning. The truth is, we don't necessarily know the reasons. Hashem told us to do the mitzvah. We can have interpretations, and they may be valid interpretations, but they're not limited to those interpretations. We still have an obligation to adhere to and perform the mitzvahs that God gave us.
The Shabbos, they say,
to remind us of creation, or remind us of Mitzrayim. Right. Zechus, yes, Mitzrayim. And, right, so that it does mention that, but that's not something, we can't deny it. We know that God created the world. We know that God took us out of Egypt. So we have to keep Shabbos. But if it says, the reason why...
Because God rested on Shabbos.
Right.
He created the world in 6 days, and he rested.
Right. Right. Oops. Saying, but for that, but that's not a reason that you can somehow twist around and say, oh, I don't have to keep Shabbos.
Well, you can say, I don't need to rest. I rested Sunday.
But if the reason, the reason why you have to keep Shabbos is because God rested, so it doesn't matter, even if I don't need to rest today, I just... On Friday, I slept for 18 hours. I just woke up a second before Shabbos started. Too bad, right? You know. So, but it means something in which there could be a specific reason that, as Shlomo did, he twisted around to say, oh, it doesn't apply to me. These rules don't apply to me. And that's the danger of being too specific. Because then all of a sudden you can start thinking that there's reasons and they don't necessarily apply. And unfortunately, that's what happened to Shlomo.
I find it very interesting that they using zikna in two ways: using zikna in chokhmah,
right,
and then using zikna in a lack of chokhmah.
Sometimes knowledge is a dangerous thing. Sometimes the chokhmah is what causes you to make the mistake.
Age, you lose clarify. No, from experience of war.
Right.
Of judging situations,
right.
You learn from experience. Having a child that gives you aggravation gives you a lesson as
right.
to how not to have a child that gives you aggravation, or what you did wrong,
right.
Which adds to the chokmah
right.
of being older. And here you're using the age when you say that Shlomo was zaken is
right.
no reason.
Right.
For doing the wrong things. Exactly the opposite. He should have more responsibility of keeping what he should be, to have learned from experience. Zaken is not.
So these four things that cause. These four. It's almost like you're saying these. There's some people that have such life altering experiences that can profoundly change them and make them mature. To mature. Beyond
yes,
their
yes,
years.
Yes.
So some of these life experiences that we mentioned,
right.
like having different challenges
right.
in their life,
right.
actually is something which could elevate you to a
Absolutely.
Status of being a Zakein, even at a younger age.
And in case of Shlomo, it does exactly the opposite. And although you...
Are you getting any smart?
I think yes.
I'm
yeah,
good.
At
I have something to look forward to. That's good.
Yes,
no,
but I'm not.
The only question, and the question is how you read Pasuk Daled, is what happened first? Did he become a Zakein? And then it says, again, one way that we read it in the English, in Behold a Nation, is that he was older. Let's say that means, whatever that word means, he became a Zakein, and then they ended up going astray. Or, as perhaps we read in the Medrash, that because they went astray, that's what gave him the status of being a Zakein. Which happened first? is the question of the reading of the sentences, the different interpretations. You're saying that because of the experiences, that's what gave him the this level of being a Zalkeim, this of knowledge.
The information that sometimes the Chachamim use Zalkeim for whatever purposes they want to use it.
Right.
In this case, they say that he was...
I mean, he definitely did acquire a certain level of knowledge through this experience.
At the very end, when he does tshuva, when he realizes that he was wrong.
But you know what? In Pasuk Gimel, before he got old, it said, Vayatu Nashav,
that's it.
He wasn't old, and they still managed to...
That's it.
Age had...
I'm talking about wisdom. Because that came is used as wisdom.
The only question about the wisdom, which is, again, certainly we could always use that translation of Zakein and Zeshekan Chachma. Attention to the word in Pasuk Dal, it says, Vayhi L'Ace Zikna Shlomo. It's an interesting word they throw in there. L'Ace means time, which is not, it could have to do with actual age and not wisdom. The fact that they throw in the word L'Ace. Or you can, maybe you can still say that because of his life experiences, this was now the time in which he acquired this.
Oh. Or he should have used this wisdom.
Right. Okay, let's continue now with the next pasuk Zayin. Az Yivne Shlomo Bama. So we don't even stop there. We continue. And then all of a sudden we find Shlomo building these altars. Lichmosh Shikutz Moav. He builds various altars for Avodah Zarah, which is Shikutz, again the same language of that which is detestable, disgusting, Moav, Bahar, on a mountain, Asher Pnei Yerushalayim, which is facing Yerushalayim, L'molech Shikutz Bnei Amon. And he also was involved with Molech, which is another type of idol worship, which was also detestable, for which represented the idol worship of those who were in Amon. And when it says Bahar, that he built this this idol worship altar, and it says it was facing Jerusalem, what mountain specifically? So Rashi says, as well as all the other commentators, Har HaZesim. And if you look on the bottom over here, where it says on the mountain, it says Mount of Olives. And then it says afterwards, in fact, the high places were not exactly on the Mount of Olives, but south of the mountain. But again, you can almost, again, when we talk about, he builds the base of Mikdash on a mountain, and here, next to another mountain near it, he builds another Avodah Zarah. So, and again, did he actually build these things? Is questionable. V'chein also l'chol na, or he allowed it to be done. V'chein also l'chol nashav hanachrios. He did this for all of his other foreign wives. Machtiros, that he burned in, there's incense that was burned. And there were altars that were made for the sake of their gods.
So it's saying he did it for himself, that's Pasuk Zion, and he did it for his wives. Where does it say he didn't do it himself? It's saying Bechain, and also for his wives.
Right. It says he built it, and also, he also did this for his wives.
I mean, it's clear in Zion, he did it himself.
Right.
Himself.
It's pretty clear. It is very clear.
But again,
that one pasuk, which you're saying, it's clear from that pasuk. If you look in Rashi, that's why everyone talks about it, because it's the Gemara, the very top Rashi in pasuk Zayin, Rabbeinu Amru, Mitoch Shlomicha Benashav Nikras Al Shemo. Doesn't mean necessarily he built it. But since he didn't protest that which he allowed his wives to do, it says, no, he was held accountable for it too. And I'm going to say a little bit of a political statement, which some people may disagree with. And, you know, there's a discussion of building a mosque in different places, in different areas, and some people are protesting. And the question is, by not protesting, I'm not saying that this is at all the same thing, but this is the same logic that some people may have, is if I allow this to be done, then it's as though I'm saying there's nothing wrong with it. So it must be that, you know, I'm not saying that I necessarily am going to worship there, but the fact that I don't say anything, I'm allowing it to happen, is as though I'm saying I'm indifferent about the thing. And the fact that he allowed all these things to take place in his area, even next to Yerushalayim, next to the Beis HaMikdash, he's held accountable to the point that Pasuk Tes continues and says, "Vias Anaf Hashem B'Shlomo." Vias Anaf, Mesudas Sion tells us, it's a lesson of Af Kas. That God was angry at what Shlomo was doing. That he had turned away from God, the God that had appeared to him pa'amoyim, two times. He was commanded about this very thing. The problem of worshipping idols, allowing this to go on. He just did not listen to what God told him to do. So it's not that this was hearsay. He knew that he was not supposed to do this, and nonetheless he did it. And the Radak points out, as well as others, in what does it mean, pa'amoyim, that God appeared to him two times. So it reminds us of those two times. The Radak says, "Begivon ha'pam ha'achas." The first time was in Givon. And that, as we were familiar, and it says it was in chapter 3, verse 5 of Melachim Aleph. There he was given the ability of anything, and he chose wisdom. Vashena says the Radak, the second time, which more recent, what we saw not too long ago, Acher Tefilaso, after the Beit HaMikdash was built, he was engaged in a very lengthy prayer, which we spent a long time discussing, and it says, Shemelo Shemata Tefilaska, that I've heard your prayers, and Vitzivla B'mir B'mar HaRishona B'stam B'mar HaShenis B'mafoyrish. God told him, even though it's not so explicitly, the first time, the second time is explicit, you're not allowed to worship idols. Two times did God tell you that you have to be careful in your mitzvah observance, and this is what you do. Go ahead.
There's no excuse.
No excuse, right.
There's no aim, there's no excuse.
And in fact, the way that we've always interpreted, there's different explanations, why would anyone worship an idol? The most peculiar thing, Avodah Zarah. And first of all, as I may have mentioned, when I was in Rome, I was fortunate to go on a Jewish tour guide through certain areas of the Vatican, and they have the most Avodah Zarah you can ever find is in the Vatican. All these different statues and everything, and all the statues. There's actually one statue which you can actually see the eyes of the statue remained, the color of their eyes, because the statues were actually were made exactly like the person with clothing, and they would have incense burning and everything, and they believed that at a certain point that they could actually be revived, they can come back to life. That's the level of what the Avodah Zarah was. But the idea is that a person felt that God is everywhere, but I can't see him. He's intangible. So it's hard to be able to worship something which I cannot relate to in a physical way. And therefore, right, so something which is physical, right. So therefore, that's how we can understand on some level why someone would create a Avodah Zarah. I have no connection. God doesn't speak to me, and this and that. So therefore, it's hard for me to be able to worship that. And therefore, that's why some people would worship a Avodah Zarah. There's some logic behind it. And again, the way that it was actually formed, they actually believed that these stones, if they were made perfectly and exactly as the person was, that they could actually ask questions and answers would come back to them, and they actually believed that they would come back to life. I'm imagining that this is what God is saying. Not only did I warn you about this, but Hanirila Pamayin, how could you worship idols? You have no excuse to worship idols. Of all people, I appeared to you two times. So the fact that other people may excuse themselves and worship an idol is because that they don't see me, or they don't have a relationship with me. You don't have that excuse. I appeared before you two times. And the fact that you did this, unfortunately, your downfall will be very, very soon. And that's precisely what we're going to be seeing in the next sentences, the upcoming psukim, that he's not going to be able to, will not continue the legacy of remaining intact one nation. group. Rather, it's going to be split.
That, and Shlomo himself did not know that he made a mistake.
We're going to have to see later on in this chapter, which is the last chapter of his life, if what his responses are, if any. And in fact, do we see clear in the sentences if he does tshuva at all? We'll have to see, yeah.
It's very interesting. I was wondering, Moab is here.
Yeah.
When he comes, he's showing, if it wasn't for his great-great-grandmother, who left Moab to come with Ruth.
Right.
To Knesset, and he would not be king.
Right. Yeah, that Pasuk Zion mentions Amon and Moab, who were
both
brothers.
Yes.
Through Lot and his daughter. Right.
And here he builds a Mikdash for the gods.
Does he instead of, and it, as we see, we're constantly going back to his father. He should have also gone back to the greatness
both
of his great great grandmother. That's right, of Ruth, and her, the way that she embraced the traditions of our people, and this is what he's doing now, he's going back to Avodah Zarah. And therefore, as we're going
to
see again next week, right, yeah, so therefore, because of this, clearly we're going to see that the Beit HaMikdash will be in jeopardy, and his being a king will be in jeopardy. His whole purpose was to spread, to embrace, everyone can do whatever they want. It's okay, this, my wife, you can worship this idol, you can worship this idol. So what ended up happening was that the fact that he didn't say that there has to be unity, right? He said everyone can do whatever they want. What ends up happening is that he will no longer have that unity, and it's going to be split. Because he and his wives were not on the same page, and they split in their views of the world, and he didn't mind it. Therefore, that's what ends up happening. It causes the split. And we're going to see precisely when that happens and how that happens next time.